Should za be allowed? It's a Scrabble word.
Oh, that's a, yeah. Well, that's easy, though. The answer is yes.
It is officially allowed, but I also play by the rule that you can use it against me once, and after that, I will never play Scrabble against you until the end of time. So go ahead and use it. I'm just never playing
one and done. I don't care. I won.
This is the Stack Overflow Podcast, episode 96, recorded Thursday, December 8th, 2016. At Stack Overflow headquarters in New York, New York, home to 25,484 street opening permits. So there are at least that many jackhammers operating right now, one of which you will hear in the background, where more than 8 million people try to live in peace and enjoy the benefits of democracy. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Pizza Saver. Invented by Carmela Vitale in 1985, this four-legged plastic gizmo has saved millions of pizzas from contact with the top of the box.
That's the little pizza table that sits
in the middle.
More like a stool. I call it a stool.
Yeah, it's like a dime-sized thing with four little plastic legs. Looks like an alien. Today's podcast is also brought to you by IBM Watson. What does a world with IBM Watson look like? With Watson, the world is getting healthier, safer, cleaner, more creative, and even more personal. That's cognitive that matters. Welcome to the IBM Watson world. On today's podcast, the usual crew, Vice President of Community Product, Jay Hanlon.
Good afternoon.
VP of Engineering, David Fullerton.
Yo.
And our news editor is Ilani Itzhaki.
Hello, everyone.
And we have a special guest, the CEO of Fog Creek Software, Anil Dash.
Hello.
And an episode of Dr. Dave's Data Desk with data scientist, Dr. Dave Robinson.
Hello.
I'm your host, Joel Spolsky. Welcome back, everyone.
Thanks Joel.
Hey.
Great to be here. This is not the first time we've had Anil on, is that right?
No, this is now the second time.
Really? Only two? I feel like it's been 100.
Thank you. Thanks. It feels like 100 times that I've been with you too.
It seems like 100 times we asked you to come on.
Feels like a few hours already today.
So what's going on, guys?
Internet.
Anything? The internet? Okay. Mm-hmm. I came back from Helsinki where I was at a goofy conference. That's my rant of the day that I was completely and literally unprepared for. Oh, and by the way, incidentally, this is supposed to be a rant. So I'll go ahead and rant. At any given time, there's a person whose job is to make sure that if I give a speech somewhere, that the basic amenities for giving a speech, like having a microphone and a place to stand, have been taken care of. There's somebody whose job that is. They have a list of things that they are supposed to coordinate with the conference providers, whoever the conference provider may be, to make sure that I have, you know, green M&Ms, a bowl of green, you know, that kind of stuff.
Green ones, huh?
This time it was Mihir, and I told Mihir, listen, what's going to happen in this job is every single time I speak at a conference, we're going to discover a new thing that we need to request from all future conference providers that we never would believe that they're going to get wrong. For example, after many years of giving talks, it occurred to me, because we had never had in my rider a demand that the audience be allowed to sit down, and at one point I gave a talk in which the audience was standing. That's like a one-hour talk. The audience was just standing in the room. Just
Wait, what?
Standing. Yeah,
wow,
yeah.
Exhausting.
They had no chairs. And I was like, you know, it never occurred to me to require chairs for the audience, but, you know.
Does that mean anytime they clapped for you, it was a standing ovation?
It was. It was very good. But we started requesting that. One of the early ones I had on there is there should be a bottle of water, because sometimes when you're giving a speech, this probably goes without saying to those of you that could imagine that sometimes when you're talking, you get thirsty, and then you go, until you get glass of water, a cup of water, or something like that. So my writer says there should be a bottle of water on stage, like on the podium, so that I can drink water. It's not a ridiculous thing to ask for. And like 90% of the time, that's already there when you go to give a talk, right? Anil, you've probably given many public talks.
Well, I have very specific demands about
my
beverages. Oh, yeah. It's a lengthy writer.
I literally should say Fiji water just to make sure they get
Anil
right.
Demands Diet Crystal Pepsi.
The
clear.
Right.
Oh, nice.
Vintage.
Nice.
Vintage that you have to get from eBay.
Exactly.
Anymore.
That's right.
Okay, so I got there and they're like, we got your water. I'm like, cool. I'm glad. They're like, we got regular water and sparkling water. And I'm like, okay, that's excellent.
This is a fancy conference. This is a fancy place.
Wow. I didn't ask for sparkling water. I don't want sparkling water. And now I realize that I should have just put regular water on the list. But when I got out there, all right, so here's the configuration. This is sort of a long story, but they're doing this Viking metal kind of stage production concert show where it's sort of a theater in the round. There's a round stage, huge audience kind of around it, wrapped around it at different levels. Giant fire pits to my left and to my right.
Wait, what?
Nice.
Yeah, like actual fire.
Sorry, is Viking metal a music genre?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
And I'm
carry
just
on.
Calling it that because a guy looked kind of Viking and we were in
fire
Helsinki.
Pits?
And
it's Scandinavian.
Are they lit? There's like fires roaring next to you.
Roaring to my left and to my right.
Okay.
They did not have the fire falling from the sky, which they had for the previous. Doesn't matter.
A shower of sparks.
Did you show up at the Olympics by accident? Is that possible?
The whole thing was overproduced, I will admit. But I walk out and discover that I'm standing on this circular stage, and I have no idea where to go and what the right place is to stand on the circular stage. So I stand sort of at the front, which seemed like the appropriate place to stand. And then I started thinking, where's the water? Because I really wanted a drink of water at that point. And this fire burning, you know, on my left and on my right. So it seems. And then I realized that the way the stage was organized, some of the speakers weren't really speakers. They were like fireside chats. And so
literally by the side of a fire.
Behind me, about 16 feet behind me, were two comfortable easy chairs. And a little table. And on the little table was two bottles of water, one of which presumably was sparkling water, and a glass. So I am standing now at the front of the stage, facing the audience, standing up and giving my talk. And if I wanted a sip of water, here's what I have to do. Turn around.
Moonwalk.
Walk backwards 10 feet.
I like moonwalk.
Moonwalk.
Yeah.
Just walk backwards.
Yeah, I feel you don't have command of the stage.
I would fall.
You got to moonwalk. That's the rules.
Okay. Moonwalk backwards 10 steps.
That was
walk,
in their writer,
to give
actually. When you agreed to speak there, you agreed to moonwalk.
Bend over. I would have to bend over in front of the audience while they waited.
Yeah. Well, that's.
You're putting a strange amount of emphasis on the act of getting from normal height to the height you can grab a bottle of water.
It was on a coffee table. The water was on a coffee table.
How low
was
the table?
Over. It's a coffee
just
table.
Could you crouch? Was that an option?
Not with his skinny jeans, no.
When you're uncomfortable with a movement, squatting is never the better solution.
All right, but crouch. I said crouch.
It's risky. It's risky.
If I crouch, it's different than squat.
It would have been all
that was
over.
A crouch different than a squat.
That's totally different.
Story. Pour myself water. Sorry. Again. It's the only sound effect I know how to make.
Allegedly.
And drank the water and then resumed, like 1 minute later,
It's a lengthy sojourn.
So we now have on the rider, it's going to say, hidden from the audience, there shall be one bottle of Fiji water within reach of the speaker at the time the speaker is giving the speaker's talk. And a ball of green M&Ms.
You should really make this like a puzzle.
I'm surprised about the green, though.
How long does it take to get water from Fiji to Helsinki?
I don't. It can just be the bottle could come from Fiji, and the water can be.
it could be tap water poured into a Fiji bottle.
Do Fiji water bottles come from Fiji, though?
Yeah.
The water does. The bottle doesn't. The bottle's from.
That's a great point.
No, they bottle them in Fiji, and they ship them on 747s.
Right. All right.
It's a terrible idea.
It's like the
Fiji
least defensible.
Dumbest idea.
Like the Martians are going to come and be like, really? This is your thing?
Yeah.
Like that's.
Yeah. I'm going to start Abu Dhabi water. It's going to be amazing.
Sahara. The beverage.
Yeah.
So Joel, you're still recovering from your Helsinki syndrome is what you're trying to tell us basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, this is, I understand now why.
Are we allowed to boo each other? I don't know the other
prima donnas like myself. End up with a ridiculous list of riders that makes them look like even more prima donnas than they are. Right. And people are like, well, you speak at our conference and you're like, oh, you need Fiji water? Okay.
Right.
I'll get you Fiji.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I really feel like we can identify with that more now. Like, we don't, this doesn't sound totally reasonable once you tell the story.
I still think your plan's under spec. They're going to need to know how long your arms are, what your comfortable, like, leaning distance
is.
Yeah.
How far are you comfortable leaning? You should dictate the height of
crouch
the table.
Parameters.
Within reach is not, you can't code that.
Okay. So this is like, your rider is like test-driven development here. It's your record of every bug that's ever happened in the past.
Exactly. Okay. That's what it is. There shall be chairs for the audience, Fiji water on the stage. I'm trying to think of some of the other things.
What's gone wrong in the past? Who hurt you?
No one may tickle Joel backstage prior to his speech. It's written down now. Never going to happen again.
No, I used to have talks where I had audio to play as a part of my slideshow.
Well, that doesn't, why would you ever even try? That'll never work.
Yeah. This one, I actually requested that I be able to run off my own laptop instead of submitting the slides in advance. And they were like, sure, absolutely. And that was confirmed several times. And when I got there, they just looked at me like
No, that'll never work. There's never been an event where that works. The audio never works. The clicker never works.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
No...
Oh, they give you a clicker to go out there with.
Right, but it doesn't.
Well, it has one button that advances the slide, and then the back button resets the whole slideshow.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Turns it off and switches
it's got a little
to
tiny
no, in all
button,
seriousness, I can't tell you how many
times.
A
little tiny next button, and then the one that starts everything over.
There's so many times I've been to an event, and they'll be like, here's your clicker. It'll advance through the slides. If you need to go back, just shout out at the guy backstage. exactly. And he'll just, like, you know, run back there and restart the entire thing. I was like, that's not, to me, this is a problem that could be solved in hardware.
Okay, that is a Joel rant. 1 minute tech review.
Ooh, what do we got?
Usually Jay says, do we have a 1 minute tech review?
But you've already jumped to the very exciting answer that we do, in fact, have a 1 minute tech
review. I need to put on my rider for this podcast, like all kinds of introductory music for the different episodes so I can just hit the bomb, bomb, bomb. I mean, okay. 1 minute tech review. Okay, this is a weird thing that happened to me, which is that I was looking for a very specific piece of software to do a very specific thing, instantly found something, it was perfect, I installed it, that's going to be my first tech review, and then discovered actually I was looking for another completely different specific piece of software to do a very specific thing, found a piece of software, downloaded that, paid for it, got the receipt, and discovered that it was the same company that made both of these things. So I'm going to review them both. So it's going to be 2 30-second tech reviews. The first one is a product called Eyeglasses. With the letter I.
Oh, these are phenomenal. If you guys haven't tried these, if you have myopia, it's an amazing difference. It's just phenomenal.
With the letter I, Jay, like eyeglasses.
Sorry. Apple has revolutionized vision. Okay, I'm excited.
What it is a really simple app. You just install it and you run it. And when you're doing all your webcam things that you do, like talking on Skype or recording the weekly fireside chat for Stack Overflow or whatever it is that you're doing, you can then adjust contrast, color, hue, saturation, brightness.
Make yourself look like an alien.
Nice. All those little buttons are there. And it just sort of intercepts itself in between your actual camera and the thing that consumes your camera device in a very simple way that gives you all kinds of controls that allows you to control what you look like. You can be upside down, black and white.
Can it do Snapchat filters? Can I do like a puppy dog face?
Simple ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it does like the real.
Isn't this, they have this on Photo Booth.
Yeah, but you can't, like, if you want it to work with, like,
this
a webcam
in real time.
App, like
Skype or Google Hangouts.
Skype, Google Hangouts, et cetera. It'll just automatically get in between whatever app is using your camera. And so that's awesome. And the other one is called Ecamm Phone View. So the next thing I was trying to do is somebody asked me, have you ever heard of such and such a person? And I was like, darn, I do. I know all about that person because I had a long text message with somebody 8 months ago. It is definitely in my text message history, but I don't know who it was with. Or where it was. And there's no way to like search all your messages back in time. So I thought, you know what I should do? I should download all my old text messages off my phone into a big old text file. And then I can grab it and find out the answer to things. So I looked for a way to do this. And they have a little app called Phone View. And among other things, you plug your phone in, your iPhone, and it downloads all your messages into a big old file. It'll make a PDF of them. I got like a 4 million page PDF of all my messages ever in time. took about an hour, and it was literally... No, I'm sorry. It was 6 gigabytes.
That's what I want. Yeah.
You're like a text
message
hoarder.
So this is an app to download all of my text messages as a PDF.
Nice. Yes. Well, optionally as a PDF. I did a CSV. The first one I did a CSV.
Oh, okay. That seems way more
useful.
The
one true format.
Yeah, which is convenient, but it doesn't show pictures, you know, like if you communicate with your friends through GIFs.
Oh, so the PDF is because of pictures. Images.
Yeah. GIF, like the peanut butter?
Sorry. GIF would stand for giraffical, not graphical.
Graphical.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Unless
you're
talking about giraffe.
A GIF pronunciation debate. That's good.
Hang on a second.
Glad I was here for this.
Constitution. Have we done that as a constitution?
No,
question?
Maybe we should.
I'd like to unsubscribe. I've left this Slack channel.
Anil, you really should have listened to the podcast before you agreed to come on.
I know. I don't. I mean, that's a little much to ask, isn't it?
I have perhaps a silly question. Did you first try pulling down on the screen with your actual text messages to reveal the search bar in which you can type what you're looking for and it will search all of your text messages for all time?
Wait, are you smoking?
Because I find that very effective.
Yeah. The search function is a good way to search things.
Yeah.
I know you converting it to, if I understood correctly, some kind of cellophane film and then scanning that on microfiche might be more interesting.
Go back to the text messages where
and
all the names are.
And he printed it to microfilm,
Jay. Oh, my
Jay.
God.
And
wow.
You just blew his mind, Jay.
Yeah, they just bilked you out of like $8.
Okay.
But at least you have more PDFs.
So your 1 minute tech review for next week.
1 minute tech review on the search function.
The company is called Ecamm. It's got two M's. We'll put links in the show notes. You should definitely, if you need either the ability. Oh, you can also download your voicemails and save them as
PDF.
I think probably MP3s and a bunch of other stuff. A bunch of other stuff. Like if you want your call history, you want to download that.
As Ogvorbis.
And store it in your Ogvorbis.
I'm sorry. I just love to talk about Ogvorbis.
What is Ogvorbis?
Ogvorbis is like the...
Like Richard Stallman's personal.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's like,
yes.
How dare you bring your IP encumbered MP3s into my life? Mm-hmm. We need something truly open
and free.
And free.
That you can construct
free as in speech and beer.
And beer.
And the one true way is my new format.
Now we're going to get angry comments on our blog post.
Yeah,
we
I know.
Because
like the Ogvorbis user is definitely listening. Like the guy.
And they can't.
The one.
No, don't worry. Don't worry. She's got a Windows phone. She has no way of accessing a podcast. It'll be fine.
Enough of that. It is time for Dr. Dave's Data Desk with Dr. Dave Robinson. Welcome, Dr. Dave Robinson.
Hello, thank you for having me.
What's cool about this is we can have Dr. Dave's Data Desk with other people. It doesn't always have to be with Dr. Dave Robinson. It's the way that we set up the name of this segment.
Oh, I should have put that in my contract. Now I know for the future.
Yeah, or it can be with Dr. Dave Robinson today with whatever substitute we decide, like Jason Punyon or something.
Jason Punyon.
Dr. Dave's Data Desk with Dr. Dave Robinson today, Jason Punyon. Anyway, we've got all the flexibility. We left in all the various options there.
So, Dr. Dave, thank you for joining us. Joel explained to me 6 or 7 times you are not the kind of doctor who can help with my rash.
I am
so
not.
We can skip the whole first section I wanted to talk about.
You should see someone about that, though.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't trust your advice. Joel said I shouldn't. David works here. He is our dating scientist in residence. And what I'm hoping, I'm already married, but I am optimistic. How would I use science if I were dating?
I think you'd use Match.com or a site like that that uses algorithms to match you with people you'd be well suited for.
Okay, Cupid.
Whoa.
Aren't they owned by the same place now?
I've been married 5 years too, so I don't really know how I'd use data science in dating.
Wait, you did not use any data science?
So it's not dating science at all. Like, that's
he did
not
use
what
data
do.
Science, but he rolled
Wait,
his own.
It's a, Oh, Jay.
Oh, dating science, right?
Oh, my God. Okay.
God, we have a laugh.
Terrible.
Is there a sadder laugh? Okay. You may well be most famous globally at this point for, I believe you are, in fact, the person who was able to discriminate. We won't get into the specific politics, but there's kind of two different Donald Trump types of tweets. And I think you were essentially, you got a lot of press around being the person who was able to sort of differentiate between sort of, you know, let's make America great again and the core Trump campaign messages versus like the full Baldwin, like 3 a.m., you know, screaming at various things. You want to talk a little bit about the work you did there?
Yeah, that's right. The discovery is that Trump generally uses an Android while his campaign team uses an iPhone. And that had been suspected a bit before, but you can tell on Twitter which they come from. And by doing an analysis, I was able to show they do have really different behaviors. The Android is much more likely to tweet in the middle of the night, and it's much less likely to share a link or a photo, and way more likely to use angry words.
So the late night angry words are the Trump as opposed to the handlers.
Are the Trump on the Android, exactly. And the ones in the middle of the day that'll have a photo and him waving, those are the iPhone, and those are the campaign.
So what is it about Android that causes all this anger?
I think it's that they blow up. I think if you're holding an Android, your days are numbered, and you really have to live while you can.
So tell us a little bit more how you did the analysis there.
Well, there I downloaded a couple thousand of Trump's tweets, and each of them says it's Android or iPhone. And I used a software package that I've been developing this year with Julia Silge called TidyText that was able to analyze them and look for positive sentiments and negative sentiments and compare them. And you can find all that on my blog, variantsexplained.org.
And that's open source, right? People can use that package themselves to analyze other people's tweets.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So I even included the code in the post because generally my audience for these posts is data scientists who want to look at some code, and I did not realize how many other people would look at it. But they got a face full of code anyway, so.
Was there a divergence on, like, time of day between the different devices and things, like who was tweeting when and that stuff?
Yeah, there really was. Midday was almost entirely iPhone, and any that were early in the morning is really when the Android Trump would wake up and start typing away. Yeah.
Sure.
I like the phrase, they got a face full of code. Like, it sounds like something like P. Diddy would say to explain the end of a big conflict he had in a club, a kind of digital club. They got a face full of code. So more recently, you just did a write-up on some of the analysis you've been doing on Stack Overflow. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in the data team, we've been doing a lot of really interesting analysis of what you can tell from Stack Overflow data and what kinds of questions people browse in different parts of the world really shows where programming technologies are popular. So here is a small sample of the kind of thing we've been looking at for the four biggest programmer cities in the world, which are New York, London, San Francisco, and Bangalore, India. So those are the four cities the most Stack Overflow traffic comes from, and we looked at what kinds of programming languages were most used in those cities.
So for at least English-speaking programmers, those are the four largest cities by what appear to be population of developers. Is that fair to say?
But this was traffic number of people visiting the site per day in 1 year. So this would be the four highest sources of Stack Overflow traffic. Together, they make up 11% of the world's Stack Overflow traffic.
Got it.
Which shows that there's sort of a wider distribution of places where people actually program than many people think. In other words, the industry is not as concentrated in San Francisco as everybody likes to imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah, in the end, I think 4% of Stack Overflow traffic comes from San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's the most important 4%, darn it. Just kidding.
Yeah, people use Stack Overflow all over the world, and you really can see it that way, yeah.
No, you understand. Those of us in the Bay Area already know how to program, so we don't need Stack Overflow. It's the people out there in the provinces and stuff who have to copy and paste their code.
Wow, that does sound like a San Francisco accent.
That's a great San Francisco accent.
It's flawless. It's like your water bottle. It's like the perfect sound.
Yeah, nailed it. Is that near the Capitol in the Hunger Games, San Francisco? Because that was what it sounded like.
So I took a look at what programming languages are most used in each of these four cities, and you can really see four different profiles. So example is here in New York, led in data scientists, including Pandas, a Python data science framework, are the programming language that I used. Here's some things like Excel, led in New York. In San Francisco, you really saw Google and Apple technologies, a lot of hip things like Hadoop. And London led in the Microsoft stack, which is what we here at Stack Overflow use. And in Bangalore, really led in Android, which really we see that globally, a lot of the world's Android development is centered in India. So you can really see these differences in languages that each city uses.
But New York is the king of Excel.
I'm going to go ahead and explain all that. New York has the finance industry, as does London. And let's see, I'm going to come up with a crazy theory now about Bangalore, which is that as an offshoring center, it did a lot of Java and therefore had lots of skilled Java programmers who were uniquely qualified to switch to Android because that's a Java-based programming environment. And so everybody wanted to build their own web app, and then sometimes they wanted to build their own iPhone app because that was cool. And when they needed an Android app, they were like, let's just outsource that to whoever is available that knows some Java. There you go. There's a whole theory that ties up
that
based on
plausible.
Absolutely no facts.
That wasn't, but yeah, that wasn't as offensive as I thought it could be.
No,
it was good.
Oh, you want the offensive?
Yeah, it's good.
You want the offensive one?
It was good.
You want the offensive? Okay, so in World War II.
Yeah, I think the thing I would clarify is it's Dalvik, not Java, right? Because this was the whole lawsuit. They're nothing alike. They're just the exact same thing.
I'm sorry. I thought those were different. Never mind.
Anyway.
Well, actually, the other thing we can find is that Android development generally globally is negatively correlated with the GDP of a country. The per capita GDP of a country that's lower has a higher portion of Android development.
Can we make a sound clip of this? Java development is negatively correlated with the GDP of a country.
Well, this explains all the anger by the certain Android users, right?
Like, it's Java is in Indonesia, I believe, which is not a wealthy country.
That's true.
Very populous.
That's, I think, exactly the reason.
Science.
Science, yeah.
So essentially, if you own an Android in America, like, you are the reason that our economy is collapsing. Basically, that fair statement.
I don't think that's...
No, now you're just making stuff.
I remember from grad school that correlation either is or isn't the same as causation. But I'm going to go with yes, it is causation.
Perfect, thank you. That's very helpful.
Right.
What, if anything, was most surprising from what you learned there? Like, was there a country where, like, the technologies they used really just revealed, you know, these are people who are weirdly into birds, or it's probably less specific than that?
For me, the strangest discovery I've had is that China is really into Go. We don't have a ton of traffic from China for various firewall-related reasons, but major Chinese cities such as Beijing and Shanghai have an even higher proportion of Go developers than Mountain View, which otherwise leads in the entire world in Go. And I thought at first this might be some kind of mistake, but I've looked around a little, and some other people have noticed this in terms of Google Trend things.
That's weird.
Yeah. What is it, like a Google office there or something?
No.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
One theory I'd throw out, we know we get an extraordinarily low percent of Chinese developers relative to what we would estimate the number that exists there are.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I didn't even know that.
Asia in general, but China in particular, we believe we have a much smaller percentage landing on Stack Overflow than one would expect from the developer population, which makes you wonder if it's like a sampling bias, which is to say, for whatever reason, they're all going somewhere else that is not us internally, that's probably in Chinese. And whatever that is may underserve Go for some reason. We could be getting like a weird sampling bias that the ones who wind up here had to come because that isn't well covered. I'm guessing, but we know we have a very small sample.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, possibly, yeah.
Or just whatever the search engines over there have, whatever algorithms they have, because nobody's using the normal Google.
Would you say that kind of thinking qualifies me as a data scientist then? Is it fair?
Sure. Unfortunately, we filled the data scientist position. Otherwise, you could have applied. Sorry, Jay.
So then I can't make my wife call me a doctor. It's really not fair when only one of us is a doctor. I think it's unreasonable, but fine.
Hey, is your wife a doctor?
Yes.
My wife is a doctor. Yeah, she cuts people's faces. And it's legal.
Whoa.
Wait, so, and yet you thought of me when you had a rash?
Well, that's...
I'm just less concerned what you think about my rashes, to be honest.
I'm going
to
leave that there. What about a data scientist?
Dada?
Yeah, would that be...
You can like a Dada scientist?
Yeah, exactly.
Dada.
I want to make a joke, but I can't remember which artistic movement it is.
Too much. High concept. Yeah.
Oh, is it Dali? Is Dali Dada? Or do they just sound similar?
They just sound similar.
Damn it.
Yeah, sorry.
Art history. Art history.
Yeah, that's not going to be the thing we're going to do great on here.
Okay. Okay. So what's the most interesting thing you're working on going forward, most excited about, where data is going to hopefully take us, or you think we can learn from the other work you guys are doing here on the data team?
Yeah, so the data team, we've been working on some really exciting things, me, Jason Pania, Nick Larson, Kevin Montrose, especially on detecting what type of developer particular people are so that we can really provide this as a product. So this fits in with our product, DAC Overflow Insights. We provide these data and analyses about the global developer landscape so we can help clients that want to engage with developers if they want to hire them or make products for them. And right now we're working on new models. We can start detecting types of developers we previously couldn't. So for example, we're looking at, can we detect cloud developers, which is really interesting to a lot of clients and even people that want to advertise with us, to tell people that do work with cloud technologies versus people that don't, people that work with big data technologies versus people that don't. And we'll have the ability really for people that visit our site regularly, which is almost all professional developers, to tell what kinds of work they do. And there's so much we can do to help serve developers and help our clients as a result.
And so just to add some color, so when you talk about insights, I don't think we've talked about it on the podcast, but insights is we take some of the data we've used in analyzing all these developers and kind of what the patterns are, where they live, what type of developers they are. And in some cases, companies are looking for like where to open an office. We've worked with people that wanted to report and they're looking at two different areas, two cities potentially, or to figure out like what's going to be a better place to attract talented developers who work in their technologies. And we work with the City of London, we've worked with independent clients who are looking for better information, both in how they can hire better developers or make decisions that will let them be in the right places, be positioned. But the core of what you're doing generally, though, is trying to help us more effectively match developers with jobs, right, with less effort by them. Kind of one of our primary use cases of this data is that when someone's coming to Stack Overflow, even on the job ads, sometimes they're seeing if we're recommending jobs from our Stack Overflow jobs product, or I think now we're starting to use it more searching in jobs to be adding information. So sometimes people will tell us what they want, but if they don't give us a lot of info, we can use this to put the right jobs in front of them. Is that all roughly on point?
That's exactly it, yeah. So that would mean even if I didn't have a Stack Overflow account, when I visit Stack Overflow, I've usually visited R and statistics questions, and as a result, it'll give me data scientist jobs. It'll be suggesting them, and targeting it that way and helping that people get connected to jobs is really important to our entire jobs product.
Awesome. Anything else you want our readers to know about data or Donald Trump or...
Viewers,
our listeners.
Did I say readers?
Third time's the charm.
You don't read the transcripts of these? They're awesome. They're so funny.
There's people that sniff around the Stack Overflow podcast.
Well, I mean, I wait for someone to text me the podcast and then I get it in a PDF and I read it.
And then he prints it to PDF. That's right.
In Braille.
Exactly.
So you're feeling it.
Exactly.
Really, all five senses.
Emotionally
there.
Feeling it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can tell you that of counties in the United States, the fraction of a county's traffic that goes to R is negatively correlated with the fraction that voted for Trump.
Uh-oh.
What are the implications?
Well, I think our readers all know what that means. Thank you for joining us, David
that
Robinson.
I mean, is the more a county uses R, the less it tended to have voted for Trump. And similarly, the more it uses C sharp, the more it voted for Trump.
Oh, I can see that coming a mile away.
Wow. And as I said before, correlation definitely equals causation. So
yes.
I want to go back to the part where everybody who's awesome at Microsoft Excel lives in New York. That's what I got.
Yeah,
that's what I took
that.
Away.
Yeah.
New York and London were pretty similar in Excel, yeah.
Let's just say New York.
I want to go back to the part where we can do Dr. Dave Robinson's data desk with someone other than Dr. Dave Robinson.
Harsh.
We are all Dr. Dave.
All right. Well, this has been Dr. Dave's Data Desk with Dr. Dave Robinson. Thank you very much, Dave.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks, Dr. Dave.
Brought to you by IBM Watson. What does a world with IBM Watson look like? With Watson, the world is getting healthier, safer, cleaner, more creative, and even more personal. That's cognitive that matters. Welcome to the IBM Watson world. It's nice to have a real sponsor, actually, for a change.
Do you think we could ever use Watson to answer questions on Stack Overflow?
I have a secret to tell you. People sort of stopped really submitting things to the site a long time ago, and it's just all being generated by Watson now.
No, Watson answers questions.
Ask questions.
Oh.
I'm kind of worried that when general AI is invented, that like the one thing blocking it will be some programming problem and it'll go ask it on Stack Overflow, get an answer and take over the world.
You know, this was actually, oh my God, now I'm scared. Because people used to say, do you think there's going to be a Skynet? It's going to take over the world. It'll destroy, it'll take over all the computers. It'll decide that we're a bug and just start to eliminate us. And I said, that will happen, but at some point it will come to a screeching halt, and there'll be a screen somewhere demanding that we update Adobe Flash, the latest version, and it'll just be stopped. All will be stopped. The human race will be saved. But if it knows how to ask that question on Stack Overflow, like, I don't know.
Please click continue to reboot Skynet.
Please click continue to reboot Skynet.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, all learning systems, you train them on what exists, right? So you train a system, it's going to be like, oh, well, you're supposed to interrupt everybody's work and bring everything to a grinding halt every once in a while. And they're just going to replicate that bug.
That'd be good. All right. As you know, we're preparing a constitution for Stack Overflow each week. We bring you a proposal and you, our listeners, will decide on whether that proposal becomes a part of our new constitution. So let's do the results from last time, which was more than 2 weeks ago. It's been a while since we've done a podcast. The last question was, is it okay to have a keyboard with extra loud clicky keys when you're sharing your office or cubicle with a coworker? With the result of last week's constitution question, here's news editor Ilana Itzkaki.
We got a 75% pro. We should be allowed to use clicky keys.
What? This is an outrage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Clear mandate.
Resounding
from the people.
On Twitter.
This was not a scientific poll, though.
Mm-hmm. All right. Was there a best answer?
Yeah. Brian at the best human, because they shouldn't be able to hear the keyboard over my trap music.
Oh. Yes. Correct answer. Marked as best answer.
I demand a recount.
All right. I'll do it. What's trap music?
Oh.
Should we put some on for him?
Is it like Viking punk?
No.
Oh.
No. Viking metal? No.
Right.
Metal. No, it's not. It's probably the predominant. No.
It's the music trapeze artists.
No.
It's
probably the predominant
strain
of hip hop right now.
Okay.
Okay.
It probably sort of evolved out of like Dirty South crunk. It's like,
I'm guessing not good for programming.
So this is like a spin-off of like kind of ludicrous Lil Jon kind of thing. It's spun off
that
genre.
Era, but a little more modern, and it's sort of informed by a lot of sort of different global movements. It's a great distinct drum sound. And it definitely would go well with clackety keys.
See, Anil is a wonderful tour guide for we old folk who don't know what's how. He was able to lead me right there through a genre I was familiar with. Lovely. Okay.
All right, today's constitution question, pro or con, GIF with a hard J.
Are you kidding me?
Really?
No.
That's our question?
Are you kidding?
You asked for it.
No.
This is somehow both controversial and undisputably already settled, and so I can't believe
it. It's done.
It's not settled.
It's done.
Is it like gift or like giraffe?
What does the first letter stand for?
Graphic.
It doesn't matter.
What do you mean it doesn't matter?
Travis. Ship has sailed. It's GIF.
It is GIF.
It is GIF.
I don't think it's GIF.
It is GIF.
Still the only person I know who still says it wrong.
It's totally GIF.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys can vote. I'm going for GIF with a hard J.
Choosy moms choose GIF.
So
it's a soft G.
Just so people don't get
confused. There's only one J. There is no hard or soft J.
There's only one J. I appreciate that.
Okay. Exactly. Pro is GIF with a hard J. Con is, how do you say it? GIF?
GIF.
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 GIF. Oh, that's cool.
Heef. It's pronounced heef.
The G is silent. It's just if.
Heef.
This is why we should not allow giraffes to vote.
Oh, Hefe.
Heef. Right.
Okay. There are some other pronunciations here.
It's a gift, though.
I wish our listeners could see me sadly shaking my head at your assertion.
Post your answer to Twitter using the hashtag #StackOverflowPodcast. StackOverflowPodcast. With either pro or con and your explanation, short but convincing, fitted in 140 characters. The best explanation, whether on the winning side or the losing side, will be read on next week's podcast, and you will win a fabulous Stack Overflow sticker, courtesy of the Stack Overflow podcast. Also, because the idea for a constitution question this week was so bad, I shouldn't be admitting that while I'm also asking people to vote on it. You do have to vote.
But if you do tweet with hashtag Stack Overflow podcast, and you advocate for the soft G, the GIF pronunciation, you can also get a free block on Twitter from me. I'll block you because you're wrong.
See, what Anil understands, Joel, and you do not, is a proper constitution would protect us from the tyranny of the masses making such a decision.
Well, all right.
Okay.
Yeah. We need an electoral college.
I was trying to find an electoral college joke. Some of you may notice that our guest today, Anil Dash.
That's me.
Is now the CEO of Fog Creek Software.
That happened. It's true.
We are sitting in the office of Stack Overflow,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sitting here using Trello to organize this whole podcast. I got little Trello cards on everything.
Yeah, it's a little intermingled.
So this is literally like sitting in your own like bathtub water that you haven't changed for 14 years.
Oh, wow. No, it's...
it's lukewarm.
It's that's actually...
And you're like a little bit thirsty, so you're sipping it.
I can't express how strongly I disagree. with that analogy.
That's just what I feel.
There were so many metaphors. There were there were thousands of possible metaphors that were
sitting in your own bathwater.
I think more accurately, Joel, I am sitting in your bathwater.
Yeah, how are we in the Joel soup?
This is what?
I was hoping.
Spolsky soup.
Figure that out on your own.
Yeah.
Let's just cancel the podcast. We're done.
Spolsky soup. That's right. We're not making any more podcasts. No more podcasts. For those of you that live a life free of Joel software and companies, you don't know what this is like to just be surrounded by everything. Everything. Can we make our own bottled water?
I think three companies is enough. Company. So there's a complicated family tree that not everybody might know because it's all happened over the last 16 years.
Well, the only person who listens to this podcast is my father, so.
Well.
You guys should create an image that lays out this family tree and can be used in multiple places
I got some critiques on the family tree. But if you go to fogcreek.com, you can see said tree at the bottom of the page. And the short version of it is, in the beginning, there was Joel on software. There was the Joel blog, the one source of truth.
Yeah.
And then Fogbugs, the first Fog Creek sort of signature product. Not the first product, because there was City Desk and other
things. Fogbugs was before City Desk.
Oh, well, okay. All right. Yeah. I stand corrected. I should know that since I work there.
But Fogbugs was created to track the bugs in whatever actual saleable thing you were going to build, right? Which wound up being City Desk. It wasn't, developed Fogbugs, you weren't planning that as the product.
Right, right.
Yeah. There's a lot of different creation myths along the way. But at any rate, Fogbugs.
Yeah, venerable. We should make up new better ones because it's getting far enough in the back that we can say anything really.
Right, yeah. People will buy. I've found people will believe anything.
Back in the day of punch cards, you see.
No one believed Joel could overnight Fogbugs to people. Professor wanted him to quit the class, but he persevered.
Yeah. But no, and Fogbugs is awesome, and that team is actually still making a very good bug tracking app. And then along the way, that led to creating other products, some of which have come and gone. And then some of the ones that really thrived were Stack Overflow in its earliest incarnations and Trello.
Trello.
Each now its own standalone company.
Yeah. And an important part as we get the creation myth is that Stack Overflow was a JV, a joint venture between Stack Overflow and Coding Horror, a.k.a.
Jeff Atwood. Yeah. And so, that was like a little superhero team up and that spun out. And then, I guess, several months ago now, maybe the beginning of the year, you and Michael Pryor, the co-founders of Fog Creek, came to me and were like, hey, what do you think about coming over here and doing this thing?
Yeah. And you said, never in a million years.
Yeah, that was it. No, it's like, I love Fog Creek, but really me, this thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
Dragged my feet for a long time.
Well, we were waiting 5 years for you to finish that other thing.
Yeah. Well, I had a startup I was doing. But also, it was like, not in a bad way, but I think it was a little like intimidating. It's like, well, this is so venerable and also so identified with you and with Michael and this sort of this DNA of Joel on software. Because like, I've made a living as a coder, but I'm like, not like I have a really strong opinion about programming.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I don't know. Is that going to be...
My opinions are all in things like how to pronounce the names of various file formats.
And you being so wrong, about the pronunciation of GIF, I think emboldened me to feel like, well, there's a place for me here in this organization.
That's right.
Yeah, you can't.
There are things you can get started fixing right away.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's just cleaning up immediately how we pronounce file formats.
That's right. First memo from Anil Dash, CEO, to
your 100-day plan.
Right, exactly. Day one, it's pronounced GIF. Second item on the agenda, nobody wears sleeves at this organization.
It was actually in part of
gun
your
show.
Rider before you...
24/7. Yeah, that's it. And then green M&Ms, that's on the rider, number three. What was it? And water from Fiji. So we're on our way.
You know GIF means marijuana in Egyptian?
That's great.
Sorry, I just thought I'd throw that
out
there. So remember, hashtag Stack Overflow podcast.
If there's one clear takeaway from all this, it's that Joel should at most be CEO of one company, and that company should have some concerns, probably.
Yeah, most, yeah, like with an asterisk. It should be like a ceremonial kind of thing.
It actually kind of is. Have you ever seen me get anything done in this company?
No, that's not true.
That we create the illusion after the fact.
Oh, all right.
We try to recreate some semblance.
Relatedly, I'm on the board of Stack Overflow.
True. I do.
Oops. You're the only one that knows that after every one of those board meetings, I sneak out and say, why don't you guys all fire me, please? I'll give you time to talk amongst yourselves.
No.
And never take the hint.
We would never do. Oh. The plan is a lot more elaborate and painful than that.
It's not painful enough. The plan is to keep me running it.
Yeah, but no, it's been exciting. And then the Fog Creek team has been working for some time on a new platform, a new tool, GoMix. and that launched this week, and that was like the most exciting thing in the world for me, because like it's amazing. It's so cool. And I saw it when it was under development. It was called HyperDev, and you know, there were sort of betas of it out and people kicking the tires on it for some time now.
Yeah.
And that was actually the thing that got me, because like you brought me in and like I got to meet the team and see what they were building, and I was like, this is just cool as hell. This is really cool. I want to use it. And it for me was like, you can, well, you use it to build apps, and it's sort of, you can get a Node.js app running in basically like 30 seconds. Like you can remix an app that's working and make something else cool out of
it. You go to gomix.com, you either find an app that does exactly what you want, click remix, and now you got your own server running, your own URL, you got the code, you can edit the code. The minute you edit the code, your new code is already running. There's no build process, there's no setup,
no deployment, no provisioning servers,
nothing. It's just running. It's just 100% of the time running. One of the things that's sort of interesting, I kind of like that, because all the things that scare you about that are things which stop me from doing things that I should have done before.
Yeah.
So, for example, I remember like YouTube came out at a time when there were millions of websites that were trying to figure out how to get user-generated video content to work somehow, but they also didn't want to host user-generated video content because they were afraid it would rapidly turn into a pornography distribution center, or that they would suddenly... That was even a problem with the Flickr generation. There were a lot of people that were like, well, hosting. We can't just host photos.
Right.
It was image bucket, photo bucket or whatever. They was like, we will host it, but if it ever gets on the front page of Reddit, we're going to stop showing it.
Yeah.
Because
the more popular it is, we'll turn it off.
Yeah. And so now you created a system where the minute it starts to succeed even a little bit, it starts to self-destruct.
Yeah.
Which is a ridiculously bad idea. And YouTube just sat through the billions of dollars of losses while they hosted everybody's videos and tried to figure out a video model, and turned out to be one of the best, you know, business models of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some other examples of that. So essentially, we made that mistake with Copilot, where we're like, okay, this was when Ev had written his blog post saying, the end of free, we're going to start charging for things on the internet now. At least I am, which he didn't. And there's no hope. You know, you got to charge for it. And we were like, all right, we're going to charge a dollar. And I think it was maybe $5 or $10. And you can use Copilot. And it seems like the perfect price. But
Joel, for our listeners, remind them what Copilot did.
Copilot was, I'm having problems with my computer. You call up your uncle who knows computers, and you both go to this website, copilot.com, and all of a sudden he's controlling your computer and fixing it.
It's a remote control login. Nice sort of.
Yep. And it was before LogMeIn and all those kind of popular mobile versions.
Very easy to use. But the way we made it work is, hey, pay with PayPal and we'll charge you $10 or $5 or whatever. And you can use it for up to a day. And then we made memberships. But that was really like that friction was huge.
Yeah.
And what we were afraid of, honestly, was the bandwidth, because we were paying for not very much bandwidth. And we did big, complicated calculations and discovered that it was going to be, you know, up to a dollar in bandwidth that we were going to have to pay to run Copilot. And, you know, that was like 2001 bandwidth prices.
But the economics had changed so much around something like bandwidth. And even like YouTube got on the right side of that.
Right.
For like broadband and people being
barely by the skin of their teeth.
Right. They made it by like a couple months. Like if they had done the exact same product.
Two months earlier, whatever. Yeah,
it would have been.
Yeah,
totally
my friend did YouTube. He did the same product, the same features, etc. 6 months before YouTube or a year before YouTube. It's called Earth Noise, and they just ran out of money.
Yeah,
they raised $8 million, and they just ran out.
Yeah, and I mean, I did a blogging tools back then, Movable Type and Typepad, and we would have to monitor like how many photos people uploaded because storage space cost money then, right? So we were like, there was no AWS or whatever, and so like the economics of like just what it takes to offer a service to people it changed so radically while we were doing it. So we became, I think later, the first consumer service that used AWS at all.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it was like, oh, well, we can do whatever we want and we can figure out all these things. But we had already set up the pricing model based on like, oh no, your photo upload is too big and we're going to just shut you down.
Right.
But it was so you wouldn't go out of business. Like we had a guy who put up a QuickTime file because there was no YouTube. Of an American Idol contestant singing their winning song. And, you know, the SEO was great. So it was like the first result in Google if you search for her name.
Winning.
Right. And then all of a sudden we were just like, there was this guy who had a random blog that all of a sudden his transfer of data was more than the entire rest of the site combined times 10.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, what just happened? And it was literally $10,000 in a day. For playing content that wasn't ours.
Right. Dave Weiner got wiped out by his number one blogging thing on his platform, Edit This Page, which is where Joel and Software started. And Joel was always number two, and number one was some guy that uploaded old musical themes to TV shows, like the Brady Bunch.
Right. Which today would be on YouTube.
And that stuff just became sort of a canonical source to get it, and the bandwidth was huge there.
Yeah. And then the question is, like, how much am I going to subsidize this person?
Right.
That's paying me $5 a month or $0 a month or whatever. Yeah. And even like stuff that we just think of as stupid now, of like, you go to Stripe and you just sign up and you pay them your 3% and you do payments. And we were like, we're going to have to build an entire payment gateway and go to authorize.net and the credit card transactions are going to eat, you know, getting $5 a month, we're giving them a dollar out of it.
Yep.
And so like just the things that are so much easier. So like that's
this is one of those uphill through the snow both ways.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's not, but I think actually it goes to the
you
Fog
kids
Creek
these
point.
Days don't know how good you have it.
Exactly. But
well, where that comes to GoMix is that we're actually like launching a container, running a server for you the minute you hit that URL, and you can hit it seven times and we'll launch seven containers for you. And you're just running a server on the internet, which we will run for you.
Yeah.
And our approach was sort of like, yeah, that could get expensive and somebody could host something that's trying to calculate, you know, prime numbers for some reason.
Yeah, please don't mine your Bitcoin on GoMix.
Yeah, please don't mine your Bitcoin on GoMix. Eventually, we'll figure that one out if you try to do that. But anything else is probably worth it because it's just silly to optimize for today's economics.
And the thing that jumps out to me, I mean, I can say this because I'm new, but like the team at Fog Creek is brilliant and they've been doing awesome work. So like, I take no credit for that. But the thing I did is I went back and looked at Heroku when they launched.
Yeah.
And in 2007, which unbelievably is 10 years ago now.
Wow.
They were like, well, we want to do a IDE that lets you edit in the browser, and we want to provision your servers for you automatically, and we want to auto-deploy your code to Node, and we want to do all these things, right?
That they didn't have Node yet.
And they started stringing it all together, and it was like there was no Docker, let alone Docker Swarm. There was no AWS for the kind of infrastructure pieces that we're doing. There was, like, Node was not as mature. Like, all these different things were missing. And so, like, the thing that I've learned from, like, your infrastructure matures is – it changes the kind of thing you can do. It's not just like it got faster, it got cheaper, it got whatever. It's like we can do something different in kind. And so I actually was really excited to like sort of send the Heroku folks a note and be like, look, this idea you had was right. And also there's sort of no new ideas under the sun. Like it's not like something's original and nobody's ever thought of it.
Yeah.
It's just that you have to hit the right time of when everybody's going to be ready to do something. And then I think, you know, with GoMix in particular, it's like it is both the thing that hardcore dev who's like, I got a great idea, I just don't want to deal with provisioning servers right now, can go and just drop their code on there and pull it in from GitHub and be off and running. But for me, where I'm like a lousy coder these days, like something that works and I can use it as a starting point, that feels like when I used to do Vue Source.
You do. Yeah.
You know, and just be like, oh, let me just tweak this thing and make the thing I want to make.
Yeah. If I could start with somebody else's code that's doing the same kind of thing that I'm doing, I'll find a place that I edit it, and then I'll go to Stack Overflow and cut and paste all the things that I need to do.
Yeah.
And then I got code running, and it's on the internet, and I'm done, and my programming problem is solved.
Right, and it just and that was the part that I loved, was solving the problem. I didn't love the, like, managing a dev environment.
So, Anil, what's the biggest, like, cultural change you're going to make now that you have wrested power from, like, is it, like, now, like,
that's a good question.
People are now allowed to draw mustaches on the oil paintings of Joel?
Yeah, I don't know. Has anybody ever seen the tweet by Dick Costolo when he joined as COO of Twitter?
No.
His one of the great tweets in the history of Twitter, which is like day one as COO, first job is to consolidate power and undermine the CEO. And then, of course, like 2 years later, he was the CEO of Twitter for a while. And I always really admired Dick's forthrightness. Of course, like the tweet looked really bad in retrospect once he became CEO. So I didn't tweet that, but that's basically the roadmap. That's what I'm thinking about.
Who are you going to undermine
the king is
and replace?
Dead, long live the king.
So step two is you're going to paint Joel as a guy who's off making dresses and not running the company, if I understand the parallel correctly. Out. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's what's that guy doing over there? I don't know. And then
Joel playing around at Square last week. I don't know what he's up to, but
right, exactly. The goal is to undermine Joel. I think everything else is like icing on the cake.
You and I should talk then, because I've been working on that for a long time.
Just to be clear, Joel controls the soundboard, dear listeners.
Yeah, I think that's pretty.
We're working on it.
I think culturally, like in all seriousness, like everything was. That was core to the culture was why I joined. I mean, I remember being a working coder in 2000 and reading the Joel test and being like, oh, this is why everything we make sucks. You know, like this is why I'm miserable.
The lack of this. Actually.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Our listeners
Yeah, exactly. Right. We are a zero on the Joel test. And this is why my life is hell at work. And then just being like this sort of epiphany of like, oh, there's a place you can go and do this. And I think that was really, because like, I mean, the other stuff, like the superficial stuff of like, we have nice lunches and stuff. Like, I think a lot of companies have copied.
Thanks to Google mostly.
Yeah.
But Google copied it from me for the record.
Right, exactly. And they acknowledge that too. And then to say, yeah, okay, you know, but at the same time, like I was saying to Joel, and this is sort of reveals too much about my thought process. I was like, you know, the Joel test didn't say Google shouldn't illegally collude with Apple against its own employees to like
to keep their salaries low.
To depress their wages?
Yeah.
So, like, it probably should have because they did that, with, like, 12 other companies. And so I'm like, if only we had updated the Joel test to be like, don't try and screw your employees out of their wages, then more companies would have done that. And so that was sort of like the cultural unfinished business where I was like, let's just continue forward. You know, what Fog Creek has
just
always been about.
Just keep adding things to the Joel
test. Exactly, right. Let's clarify and extend.
It's going to be like Joel's rider. It's going to be 400 questions.
Exactly. Green M&Ms, and please don't illegally collude against your own workers.
Right.
And I think that sort of like
I
that
just have
thing
one more
like,
question in my interview sure. before I accept the job. Do you ever illegally collude against your own employees?
And the thing is, shame on us for not putting it on the list before, but I guess we didn't think we had to mention it. Yeah, exactly. hadn't occurred to me that was what you're going to do by default.
How about manipulating the stock option
grant
strike
price?
Right,
retroactively.
Yeah.
Also illegal.
Yeah.
I have an important question about Fog Creek culture. Are you going to maintain the rule at Fog Creek where people who don't want to eat lunch together are actually forced to attend the company lunches and converse with coworkers that they hate?
Oh, yeah. Compulsory. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Compulsory lunches.
That
makes people feel like awkward or like they're being forced into interacting with others, that's mandated.
So, yeah, that was a weird controversy, which has been probably covered on this podcast before.
Oh, I didn't
know. I don't
know
if we talked about it.
I think I've established
this
is
back in the days of Jeff Atwood, which is that I wrote a quick blog post saying, hey, at Fog Creek, we eat lunch together every day. It's really fun. It's one of the nice benefits of the job. Mm-hmm. It's a great rest from the work that you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. And I didn't realize.
It is actually the highlight of my
internet
day.
Lost their mind.
Well, of all the things I've ever written on Joel and Software, nothing got so much negative feedback as that one post saying we enjoy eating lunch together and it's free. And people are like, are you kidding?
Fact check. There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Kidding?
No, it was that people were like, I hate my coworkers and I would hate working for a company where I'm expected to eat lunch with them.
Right. I actually do remember the conversation. And I think it triggered the impulse people have of, why am I being forced to sign a birthday card for a person I've never met?
Right.
Right? You know, like this, I'm in
or
this
I'm
horrible.
An introvert.
Right. Or I'm an introvert. But there's a little bit of that, like, I'm in a horrible like cubicle being forced to do this thing I don't want to do. Yeah. And now they're like twisting my arm to go eat some slop.
So the first
thing
is like I'd literally never seen like I will cop to the fact that I'd never seen an instance of somebody that did not enjoy the lunch together that we had at Fog Creek. Mm. And I guess we'd probably selected out a few of those in the early days. There were probably some interns that didn't come back because they just didn't like.
What it is it's a different thing.
Yeah.
And I think there's a couple structural reasons why. I think the first is basically like one big ass table.
Yeah.
Right. So my title is the CEO. And the first day I was like, I wonder if anybody's going to sit with me at lunch. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's still...
And Neil, I assume you sat in Joel's old throne at the head of the table?
That's right. It's a,
okay.
It's like a conveyor belt that just feeds you up to the throne. Yeah. No, but I was just like, I wonder if anybody's going to sit with me. And then I was like, oh, it's one table. There is no... Nobody's going to sit with me. There is no cliquishness and there is no...
No, you just join a group of people that are there.
But right, but that's not obvious. So like in your post, you know, when you're like, everybody sits together at lunch, you're like, oh, there's going to be these three tables and...
I'm going to be all by myself over
Or these people who are like brown-nosing to this management person over here are going to go sit there or something like... I think that perception is sort of brought with you.
It's absolutely true. 100% of the people that were reacting negatively came from an environment where I, too, would not want to be forced to eat lunch in that environment. In particular, the other thing that they're sort of forgetting is that if you get a private office, you don't actually see other human beings for the first three hours in the morning.
Yeah.
And that's your first break to actually socialize, talk about movies.
Especially
because
you wrote
that
before there was Slack, before there was Google Hangouts. Yep. And so, I mean, that's the other thing is like in the office all day, we're like on Google Hangouts with each other and in Slack. And it's very sort of, you know...
They're social.
Yeah, very social. Exactly. And so like there's the connection there already. So you know who you're having lunch with. But that stuff wasn't obvious. And I think if I had just read it, I'd have been like, oh, God, they got this like team spirit dude is twisting my arm to go and eat spaghetti with him today. And like, I don't want to do that.
It's always spaghetti, to be clear.
Yeah, exactly. Every day is spaghetti. Well, I mean, we had like pork buns the other day, like good ones. I was like, Mike. I didn't know.
Wait,
that
like char siu bao? Like that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, boy,
like,
all right.
They went all in, and I was like, that's grown folks' food.
That was just for you. Usually it's spaghetti.
Thanks. Everybody else had spaghetti. But
the rest of them got half a portion of gruel, so you could have the char siu bao that day.
Please, sir. Can I have some? No.
Did I say spaghetti? I meant SpaghettiOs. It's actually SpaghettiOs. You just get a half can of SpaghettiOs.
It's Spaghetti X's. It's off brand. A little cheaper. We save a half a cent.
Spaghetti zeros. Slightly narrower.
It was like an eye opener. It's like realizing just the vast gulf between what a lot of people's normal working experience is, and the everything that Joel writes about the environment that we tried to create.
Yeah.
It was like the mirror opposite.
Yeah.
I come into work and I go into my office and it's quiet and I get 3 hours of solid work done before lunch, and then I go and I talk to people during lunch, and then I go back in my office and it's quiet and I get work done. And people are like, I come in and I have 3 hours of people interrupting me and talking to me, and they won't leave me alone. And then lunch is like my 1 hour to myself where I can get something done. And I was like, oh, that is a different world.
I mean, that's the thing. It's real, right? Like, I read Joel and Software from the beginning, and I read all the sort of like the Talmud of Joel about like, here's how you have a company. And like this thing of like, here's what you ought to do. Even I was skeptical. And I was like, really? Do they really do that? And it's real. I think that was like one of the most shocking things as I was considering joining Vagrant, because like, oh, this thing is a thing you can actually do.
There is sort of a repeated theme of people joining Stack Overflow and about 3 months later saying, yeah, I remember all the propaganda you told me before I joined about what a great place it was to work. And it's really true.
Yeah.
It's like 3 months later, they're just like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like,
well,
right.
But
secret?
I think it's hard to overestimate how much people are sort of beaten down by their other jobs and their other experiences where it is horrible.
Ex-employees piled up dead like cordwood in the basement before. And they're like, where?
Yeah. That's it's fueled by their tears.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, and that's how the turbine moves. But the like,
well, unicorns in prison.
Exactly. And I mean, I had a conversation the other day with Adam, one of the guys on the Fog Creek team, and he's one of the more sort of tenured folks. He's been there some time, 8 years.
Yeah.
And we were talking about some work stuff, and then we were sort of like just talking about like chatting. And it ended up being about an hour conversation. And he was like, is this a meeting? And I was like, well, no, we're just talking, like, getting to know folks while I'm still new or whatever. He's like, okay, because this is the longest meeting I've ever had, you know? And it was just sort of an epiphany to me, because I was like, I got to be more careful with that so I'm not, like, stealing people's time. But also, there just hasn't been, you know, for somebody that's been there longer than almost anybody, he's never had to actually talk to, you know, a management person for an hour ever. And even when it finally did happen, it was mostly because we were just talking socially about other stuff. And so like, that was an education to me, because I've been in jobs where I had bosses that droned at me for an hour all the time.
All right. Well, Anil Dash is now the CEO of Fog Creek Software. You can find his personal blog at anildash.com, his Twitter at Anil Dash. We should get you like a real Anil Dash or fake Anil Dash.
Yeah,
like
I'm verified, man.
Verified Anil Dash with a check mark.
Yeah. Oh, did you get it back? Didn't you make your profile private and lose it? And then...
Yeah. But, you know, they can't keep it away too long.
Thank you. Thank you. Coming on the show, Anil. We have an audience that's going to applaud. Shall we do some news?
Ooh.
Sounds good. Our very own Nick Craver wrote a blog post on how Stack Overflow makes money. He writes, quote, I am insanely lucky to work with some of the best developers, sysadmins, designers, managers, marketers, sales, and all of the people who support that in the world. I don't build Stack Overflow. We build Stack Overflow, unquote.
This is a great segue off our last
sort
thing.
Sort of mediocre. Let's see, Nick, what's going on here?
This definitely is one of those things that feels like I know what Nick is saying, and I think it's inspirational. But if you're an outsider in a crappy job, it's like, I love how Stack Overflow makes money. I love my partners. It is not I. It's one of the lens is so clouded. Like,
it sounds ersatz, but it's not. It's real.
Yeah, and actually, if you read the post, actually, I don't think the post doesn't have that problem, right? As he walks through sort of his...
It's a great post because like, a lot of people just don't know how Stack Overflow makes money, or that it makes money, or that it's a company, or that
they're
always blown away when I'm like, hey, you guys, I posted somewhere that we now have 300 employees at Stack Overflow. It was on Hacker News, and people were like, what? 300 employees?
What
I didn't
they
even
doing
know they were a company.
That? Yeah.
And
somebody has to sort the green M&Ms.
Yeah, well, right. Six of them are Joel's first footmen. And then obviously there's valets.
Look, we're answering 8,000 questions a day. That takes at least 300 people.
And somebody has to split the spaghetti O's from the spaghetti X's.
True.
And it's cool that Nick wrote a really good post, got a lot of eyeballs from a developer perspective, I guess.
Yeah. It was good because the story is there, but it hasn't been obvious. I think people just sort of don't know it. And I have that all the time with thing.
Right.
I'm on the board and they're like, yeah, that's great. I use it all the time. Is it going to be around? Like, how does it make money? I was like, it's a real business.
They definitely a real business. And the answer? Unicorns. We have two unicorns in the back room. And we use them to punch the holes in the middle of CD discs. You know, there's a circular hole in the middle and you punch that on a unicorn's horn. That's why that's our secret. And then we charge money for that.
What happens with the CDs?
You sell them. We sell them in Tower Records.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
The hard part is the time travel.
Yeah, our records. No.
Unicorn solved that too. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to tell our podcast listeners are super educated. We don't have to tell them how we make money.
Go read the blog post.
Or read the blog post by our own Nick Craver. Nick Craver is sort of, I guess, what's the title? He's the head of the architecture group?
Yeah, architecture.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
It's a little bit more like the, if you do that, you will blow up my servers with incompetence.
That sounds technical and complex. I'm going to go with like the Anthony Hopkins in Westworld. Keep going with this theme.
To be clear, he doesn't like to be called architect because that sounds stupid. It's the architecture lead, which is
your
totally
architects
different.
Send your letters to...
That's a much better term.
What?
I don't mind architects.
That's the term he uses in his blog, yeah.
There was sort of this syndrome of the Java era where architect started to mean a Java programmer with 18 months or more of experience.
Yeah, okay.
And nothing else, because it's sort of like that was everybody's career ambition was to move up from developer to architect.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Tell their grandmother that they were an architect.
Well, architects boss engineers around in construction.
I'm going to call him Art Vandelay in an obscure Seinfeld reference.
Exactly. That is a good Seinfeld reference.
That's Art Vandelay lead.
And you want to be my latex salesman. Okay. Enough Seinfeld jokes. Do we have more news items, Ilana?
We do. When are you too young to code? When should you teach your children how to code? A recent trend has parents buying tech toys en masse and registering children as young as 2 years old for programming classes in order to give them a head start. Ooh. Some academic centers in New York City have seen an explosion of parents registering their four-year-olds in programming classes, which cost between $300 and $600. Dr. Kat Cohen, founder and CEO of an admissions counseling service, explained, saying, quote, private school admissions are cutthroat, and to be honest, 3- and 4-year-olds don't have a ton that makes them stand out from other 3- and 4-year-olds.
I love that quote.
Okay. But if they know OCaml instead of just Java like the other 3-year-olds.
What's a nice way to say, like, Manhattan-based admissions counselors for kindergartens are the worst people in the
that
world?
Works. That works. That works.
Is there, like, a...
You do just you know any of these people, Anil?
I've encountered them. I have a 5-year-old who started kindergarten a couple months ago.
Okay, congratulations.
Public school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, parenting in Manhattan is always like essentially
fraught. It's fraught.
Can I use my child as a proxy for why I'm dominating these other people down the street?
Oh.
Right. It's a weird, it's like total projection. Mm. And so when they're getting into the like competitive preschool admissions thing, they're trying to do the like whose kid is doing the most. And I was like, listen, like these children are eating paste and picking their noses. Like, there's no, you know what I mean? Like,
which
there's
one
not
of them in Manhattan. This is not Queens.
Yeah, well, yes, they are. And the rest of what you want them to do, like, who cares? Like, let them play Legos and be children.
I like the way you say Legos instead of just eat paste.
Yeah, or both.
And boogers.
Yeah.
I have a friend, Truman. He's one of the CTOs at Bloomberg. And I was actually talking to him about it. He has an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old. And he started the 4-year-old with Roblox. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, as long as it's fun, you know.
Yeah, there's awesome toys.
Yeah.
Like, there's a thing. I mean, technically, I think it's a Scratch-alike programming environment that they have for the BB-8 droid, the Star Wars droid. You have this little Bluetooth droid.
Yeah.
And you pair it with your iPad, and you can give it instructions for where to roll around. And my son was doing that when he was 4, but I wasn't like, I really, really want you to learn programming.
Let's do a code review.
I was like, let's play with Star Wars.
Right.
That's fun. Yeah. Yeah, it's not code golf.
Jay, you have children.
It feels like there's two different issues. Like, I think there's a weird overlap between, like, what's a good age to encourage kids or expose them to code where they might enjoy it or where they it seems like they enjoy it, you can kind of help them get, like, to your point, like, my son played with Scratch Junior. There's, like, an even simpler version. And he loved it. Like, he created the loop.
Yeah. It's really
where
good.
The guy moved 7 times, and then it created
amazing.
A loop where it buzzed a buzzer forever. Yeah. Forever. And I would go and break the loop because I'm like, totally. He's just dragging stuff randomly. And he would go and put it back down. I'm like, nope, he can do that. Like, this resonates.
And it's so much better than Logo was at the same age. Like, I was 4 or 5 when I found Logo, and it was like, okay, Turtle made a square. But look, this is cool.
I think that's blended with, there's a different thing, which is like the over-intense preparing children at what's clearly a play and exploration age for, like, you know, competitive college admission. Yeah. Did your kids go to preschool? You talked about the, like, preschool in the city?
Daycare, yeah.
Because we wanted to put Griffin in play school just because he was excited about lots of learning stuff.
And
there are no good, like, all of the options. There were, like, more pretentious and less pretentious. But they all had, like, applications that, like, you had to drop off on a certain day. First come, first serve, they were going to be reviewed. And there were essays.
Yeah.
They didn't write them.
Yeah, it was the whole thing. Yeah.
2.5. This is like pre-read. They're 2.5. And there's essays, to your point, about, like, what delights your child?
Right.
I'm like,
right.
He's 2.5, not yeah. puking. He's super
exactly.
happy
when
he's
I change
puking.
His diaper. Like, I don't know what. Like, what do you want
like,
me to
this is yeah. nonsense. You were literally yeah. sitting there like, yeah. what is this in X? Like,
madness.
How does someone review these?
And what those things make obvious is it's the parents competing with each other. It's got nothing to do with the kids.
Yeah,
and so, and so like, that's the thing. It's like, for me, like, I was lucky. I had a Vic 20 when I was 5.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I could do logo coding on it, you know, and it was like simple.
So cool.
And it was so fun. And I was like, that's all I want. Like, the rest is like, I'm certainly not going to win the like New York parenting competition. But like, can we have fun hacking on something? Absolutely.
I had like a 1 foot piece of a 2x4 and a nail. That was my toy. I could hammer the nail into the 2x4.
I had a piece of string and a ball of mud. That was my logo 20. Turtle.
Wow. So yeah, lucky.
I was very fortunate.
Well, you've gone and wasted another hour of your life listening to Stack Overflow podcast number 96, recorded Thursday, December 8th, 2016. At Stack Overflow headquarters, this podcast has been brought to you by IBM Watson. What does a world with IBM Watson look like? With Watson, the world is getting healthier, safer, cleaner, more creative, and even more personal. That's cognitive that matters. Welcome to the IBM Watson world. And the Pizza Saver. All hail the Pizza Saver, the pipsqueak piece of plastic protecting people's pies. Did you get that? Did you get that? Should I say it again faster? Audio engineer is Carlos Hernandez, audio editor is David Greenlee, producer is Jess Pardue.
We are not cutting out Uber for dicks.
Executive producer is Caitlin Kike. For Anil Dash, David Robinson, Jay Hanlon, Dave Fulton, Elon Musk, talking. I'm Joel Spolsky. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Drop.
Glad we're back to the Pizza Saver. I had a follow-up item. You have no frigging clue how big a dime is. I just wanted
yeah,
to highlight that.
It's a quarter,
that.
Not
it's a
dime.
It's like a quarter. That's what I was.
It's like a big, like a quarter,
silver,
silver
dollar.
Dollar
piece.
It's like a silver dollar. It's nowhere yeah. near dime size.
Yeah. It's really, yeah. I'll tell you the truth, I do know how big a dime is. I just don't know how big those little pizza things are.
Last time, Joel ordered a pizza from a place that comes with a pizza
that's right.
thing.
Joel's like, the last chef that brought me a pizza was executed.
It's like me. I'm like a 6'5 stuck in a 4'11 body. You know?
It's also actually in Joel's writer, he never handles change.
You guys, change is gross.
I'd like to unsubscribe. I've left this Slack channel.
They are face full of code.
Cluck, 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 cluck.